What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
This podcast was produced in partnership with our sponsor, Essilor.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Lyerly, and I won't steal all the glory because I'm also joined by my co-host and partner in crime. Please welcome Dr. Daryl Glover.
Yes, yes, I'm here, Jen, and I'm ready to have a lot of fun today. How about yourself?
Well, a lot of fun because we're talking about science. So, and I know because we're nerds, we actually find that fun, especially when it's eye science specifically.
Absolutely.
Who better as a guest, as someone who is really their whole career is focused on that part of optometry. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Pete Hanlon. He's the Senior Director of Professional Solutions at Essilor.
Hi there.
So Pete, that's one heck of a title. Can you tell us exactly what it is that you do?
Yeah, it's a little bit ambiguous, perhaps on purpose. But what I do is I am one of the few people of Essilor that actually have a history as a practitioner. So in my case, I'm an optician, but I was an optician for 15 years before coming to Essilor about 15 years ago. So managed a lot of optometric practices. And the last 20 years or so, I've been a continuing education speaker as well. So
what first drew you to become an optician, getting into the industry?
To be honest, my undergrad degree was in theology, but as a wise man once said, philosophy bakes no bread. So needed a profession. I got employed at an optical lab and I just pestered everybody with questions until I finally decided I wanted to help patients. And then one of the doctors at the practice I was at was going to start a new practice. And so that's when I started getting into optometric practice management. And from there, I've just done a lot of reading and a lot of speaking and a lot of learning.
What's so interesting is like when we think about theology as a background, it doesn't come like first thing to mind, like a heavy science curriculum, but that's really what has been grabbing a lot of your interest lately. Tell us about what you're doing at Essilor with blue light exposure and the kind of research going on there.
Sure thing. Until recently, I was heading up our technical marketing department. So as you may know, Essilor is a pretty much an R&D driven company, which means we have a lot of French scientists over there that are working on a lot of different things. And my little niche is that I understand pretty much what they're talking about on the science side, but I can also do the optical and marketing speak to translate that for our marketers. So a number of years ago, maybe 5 or 6, we started hearing about Essilor's research into blue light. And so, you know, as we've launched each thing from wave technology to blue light, I start reading up on the subject. With blue light, I've got a stack of papers that I've read on my desk that's probably about 6 inches tall. It always amazes me when I talk to a practitioner that says, oh, I don't really know that there's that much out there about blue light. There is a ton out there about blue light. You just have to read the journals and read the studies.
So let's talk about blue light in a little more detail then. Since you have all the knowledge in the world, let's break it down. Just give us a good overview of what blue light is and how we should be looking at this in our practices.
Sure thing. So what makes blue light interesting actually is that if you look right in the visual spectrum, right around where the break is between blue and green, something happens that's really interesting with light. As you get shorter in wavelength, the light gets more powerful, so the photons pack more punch. And when you get into blue light and you start getting even shorter down into UV and eventually gamma rays and x-rays and all that, the distinguishing factor is that the photon in blue light has enough energy to actually interact with your body and make a change at a cellular level. For example, if you're under a bunch of red light, the only thing that red light photons do is if you have enough of them, they vibrate in your body and they cause the sensation of heat. But a blue and shorter light photon actually can hit a cell and it can actually cause a chemical reaction in that cell. And that's what makes blue light and UV kind of interesting for the human eye.
There's an interesting thing about blue light, Daryl, and I think you see this in your own patient. It has really connected as a sense of concern to the general public. The average person on the street is kind of familiar with blue light and it being a negative thing. And it's probably one of the few cases in eye care where we've been able to properly get the word out that there's something they should be worried about with their eyes. Why do you think blue light has instilled this appreciation concern with the average person?
It's a good good news, bad news story. You're correct. Blue light awareness is, compared to most ophthalmic interests and optical interests, people are pretty much not engaged and not interested. Research shows that at least 35 to 40% of consumers know that there's something bad about blue light. So that's the good news. The bad news is almost all of those people know that the bad thing about blue light is that it actually can disrupt your sleep patterns. And that's what they get concerned about. So they don't realize that the other ramification of blue light is it can actually impact the health of your eye over a long period of time. So
when you're in patient care, Daryl, how do you approach the topic or the subject of blue light? Do you let patients bring it up to you? Do you bring it up to them? What is your typical experience?
No, I mean, every patient that walks through the doors, I mean, I have this conversation with them because, I mean, blue light is an issue. You know, it can impact their circadian rhythm. It can cause eye fatigue and strain. So it's something that we definitely want to bring to the attention of our patients. And again, it is a big buzzword that's out in today's society. So I want to get ahead of them before they actually come in and ask about it. So what I typically do is just talk about their lifestyle, definitely get into how much screen time they actually use, whether it's a cell phone or a computer or some type of digital device, and go from there in regards to, you know, what we can do to combat some of those things that they may be experiencing as far as symptoms. How about yourself, Jen?
I'm the same way. I approach it from the place where I feel like I've got the most research to support me, where I'll talk about light sensitivity, eye fatigue, tired eyes, you know, these sort of things that patients symptom-wise are bothered by. I have been more scared off on talking about retinal damage, even though there are definitely studies to support it. Thinking, oh, I'm going to start talking about retinal toxicity. Then I'll hear someone else mention, well, that study is not in vivo. It was more looking at things in vitro. So you can't really put that onto the human eye. Mr. Haley, in your opinion, how much should we talk about retinal toxicity when we talk about blue light?
I think, and by the way, I share some of your concerns. And it's easy to talk about blue light and sleep patterns because that's something that affects you today. It's a lot harder to talk to a patient about something that might affect them a long way down the road. The part that I would say that I would have some confidence in talking about blue light is when it comes to the role of the sun. And that's really the thing that I think that's been overlooked in the blue message is that we get really wound up about the electronic devices and the inside light sources. But in reality, the one known quantity that can definitely damage your eye with blue light is the sun. And most patients go outside in the sun. And the one area that I've been able to engage optometrists a little bit on to get them kind of interested in talking to their patients is I can suggest a particular patient that you really need to talk to. And that's the patient that's had cataract surgery. So in the United States, the most common medical procedure out there is cataract surgery. Over 3 million Americans have it each year. What a lot of optometrists don't realize is that about half of the cataract surgeries that are being done right now, the ophthalmologist is putting in a clear IOL, not a blue blocking. They only use blue blocking IOLs in about half of surgeries as of the current date. So what that means is that if you've got that 60, 65 year old patient who gets a clear IOL, they have a retina that's not really all that efficient anymore at dealing with the oxidative effects of blue light. And when you put that clear IOL in, you're taking out a nice yellowed lens that's really reduced the amount of blue that gets to the retina. And now you're really heavily dosing it with blue light. And there's a study that really rather distinctively showed that if you do that, the people that get the clear IOLs are much more likely to get macular degeneration, or at least the advancement of drusen and other signs.
That study that you cited done in Japan, I think it's frightening. It actually really scared me when I was looking at that data. And it was a small sample size. I think they were only looking at around 100 eyes. But the chance that just a few years, I think it was over 2 years worth of data, in 2 years time, they could see significant progression of macular degeneration in people with clear IOLs versus the blue blocker or yellow IOLs. That, again, that circles me back to think, oh my gosh, I should be talking about blue light as a danger. Why? Because in the 90s, my understanding of it is pretty much all cataract surgeons were using a yellow tinted blue blocker IOL. Why did the trend move away from that where we're seeing more clear IOLs than we used to?
I've actually talked to some ophthalmologists about that. And actually what they've trended towards is they didn't used to use UV absorbing IOLs. And now they all do, of course, because we know that that damages the eye. The blue, the reason that they don't use the blue are a couple of concerns. First, they're mostly concerned about, hey, I'm going to put this blue blocking IOL in, and my patient's going to notice that they don't get the color perception that they thought they were going to get. And once it's in there, I can't exactly go in and take it back out, you know, but you can always give them blue absorbing eyeglasses. So that's one rationale. The other rationale that they worry about is if I absorb some of that blue light, it's going to decrease the signal that tells the pineal gland to produce melatonin at night, which already kind of gets decreased as you age anyway. And so they're worried about sleep patterns for their patients post-cataract surgery.
I think this is kind of hilarious, Daryl, because it sounds like at least part of the argument is the cataract surgeon is expecting us as the prescribing optometrist to solve the issue with our post-op glasses. And many of us probably aren't even thinking to talk about it for this patient.
Yeah. And the catch is this, you know, what happens whenever someone comes out of cataract procedure, you know, when both eyes are done, they're going to come to our office and tell us, hey, I don't want any glasses at all. So in reality, they're not even going to wear something that's going to truly protect the eyes from blue light. So for ophthalmologists not to actually have some type of blue blocking property, that's really upsetting. And when I sit down and think about it, I don't know what the ophthalmologists use that I actually refer to. So I need to do a little more digging and figure out if they're actually using the ideal lens of choice.
I think the onus really circles back to being on us, because while it's easy for post-operatively to say like, oh my gosh, you've got great distance vision now, you'll just need some Plano sunglasses and you get those over-the-counter reading glasses, like that's a disservice to my patients. I know my 65-year-old patients use computers. They use cell phones. Like, that's something that I shouldn't be talking to them about over-the-counter readers for. And there's a science and a reason for what I'm recommending when it comes to a higher quality eyewear.
So yeah, that's interesting information there. Let's talk about kids, millennials. I mean, that's a big population when it comes to educating about blue light in that exam room. What recommendations do you have, Pete?
Well, like I said, I like to stay on solid scientific footing. And we know for a fact that the sun puts out enough blue light to damage your eye. So I start there and I say, hey, I would start there if I were still an optician and talking to patients. And I would say, you know, hey, you have to protect yourself against the sun when you go outside, because the blue violet light, without going into nanometers and all that stuff, it can damage your eyes. There's other studies that show that. Then I would also go in to say that, you know, hey, the devices that you're using for hours and hours and hours a day put out the same color of blue violet light that can damage your eye, albeit at a much lower level. And to be honest, we don't know that your electronic device is going to damage your vision, but we know that that color of light is not good for your eye. You know, there's a number of manufacturers, including Essilor, that have a clear lens that can absorb, you know, 20% or more of that light that's being emitted by an electronic device. It doesn't do your body any good. So why don't we go ahead and absorb some of it and keep it away from your retina?
I really like that approach. That's my focus when I talk to kids too. I focus on outdoor sun protection and UV protection. And then I talk to parents and I'm like, you know, it used to be inside, you're thinking, oh, well, I'm protected in here. I'm not exposed to the sun. But nowadays, we're exposed to the secondary source at such higher levels. So that makes protecting your eyes outside in the sun even that much more important, because there's no reprieve that you're getting indoors. But I mean, here's the thing about talking to kids about UV and blue light protection. Getting kids to wear their regular clear indoor glasses, doing their indoor things, that's a lot easier than getting them to put on sunglasses when they go outside. There's something about that act of putting sunglasses on, even if they're a habitual glasses wearer, that is a real challenge. So how do you overcome kids and parents who say, oh, my kid won't wear their sunglasses?
Well, I think one good way to talk about it is to talk about warranties. And what I mean by warranties is over the past 20 to 40 years, we've done a good job at extending the warranty on your heart. So it used to be back in the 40s and 50s, people had the good common sense to have heart attacks in their 60s and pass away. And the reason that I say that is because the warranty on your retina is still at about 65 years. Your retina does a good job at dealing with blue light and oxidative damage and all that sort of stuff for about 65 years. And then it doesn't do a very good job anymore. So the thing I would talk to a younger person about is, hey, you're younger, you can expect to live into your 90s. Your heart's going to make it just fine for 90 plus years. The problem is that your eye is going to make it about 65 years. And that blue light that you're getting exposed to, it's like a ticking clock because it's cumulative. So if we can reduce your exposure today, and the most significant way we can do that is if you wear a tinted lens outside, we can make sure that when you get older, you don't get, you know, not that we can ensure that you won't, because your genetics have something to do with it. Your, whether you smoke or not has something to do with it. Your diet has something to do with it. But we can do something that can help your eye sustain good vision for a longer period of your life. Transitions is probably the best product for that. And we know that historically, we don't think that younger people want to wear Transitions, which is why later this summer, we're going to bring out some new style colors and mirrors even that should make Transitions a little cooler for the 18 to 25 year old. So maybe we can get them to wear them.
Transitions is already cool for young people.
Oh yeah, I never leave the house without my Transitions. There's no doubt about it. But just to circle back on something that you touched on, I think one of the key words you mentioned was cumulative. I use that word all the time in my practice whenever I'm talking about UV exposure, because people are always looking like, oh, it's not hurting me now, so it's not a big issue. But when you use that word cumulative and you use, you know, examples like smoking or diabetes and adds up over time or weight gain, it really hits home to people and they really understand that, hey, you know what? I need to wear my sunglasses. My kids need to wear their sunglasses, and it makes a big difference. And typically what I'll see is that following year, the parent has invested in a good pair of sunglasses and the kids are wearing sunglasses as well.
That's good. That works a lot better than my scare tactic. What I used to do was show kid a Pinguacula picture and then everyone in the room a little bit. And then
that's good though, Jen. I like that.
I say that only for the especially defiant children now.
And nowadays there's a lot of those out there. So I might have to steal that trick there. Okay.
Why don't we talk a little bit about the options available? Because I think a lot of my patients come in actually understanding they are interested in blue blocker technology. They want to learn more about it, but they are kind of thinking that they're going to be stuck with yellow glasses, and things have come a long way.
Yeah. You actually don't want to wear yellow glasses during the day. And the reason for that has to do with, of course, that circadian rhythm, because the way the circadian rhythm works is the difference in the signal. You need to get a good strong dose of blue turquoise sky colored light during the day. And then that signal has to go down at night. That's what makes your body produce melatonin and go to sleep. So the products that have it, and I can speak probably most intelligently to Essilor's, but again, there's lots of manufacturers that have products out there. We have a series called Essential Blue Series. That's basically a lens that appears to be clear, but it reduces exposure to that blue violet 415 to 455 nanometer range by at least 20%. So that's one product. You can find that in Eisen lenses, in Verilux digital lenses. We also have now with the Essential Blue Series, where even if you're giving a regular single vision lens, you can order it with it looks clear, but it's going to absorb at least 20% of that harmful blue light. And of course, the other product that we've already talked about is Transitions. If you want to reduce blue light exposure, there is no better product on the market than Transitions, because it reduces exposure to harmful blue light by at least 20% indoors, and then it goes up to about 85% or even more when it fully activates outside.
And specifically that extra active version, I mean, that does a heck of a job indoors and outdoors as well, correct?
Correct. So my mom recently got cataract surgery in both eyes, and I had her ask the doctor, because he never brought it up, you know, so what kind of IOLs did you use? And it turns out she's got clear IOLs. So she now wears Transitions Extra Active, because indoors it's going to block about 30% of harmful blue light when she's on her computer. And amazingly, my mom likes to get on her little tablet and everything quite a bit. And then when she goes outside, an extra active lens goes up to about 90% blockage of harmful blue light.
That's incredible. Probably about 90% of my glasses, and I have a lot of them, have the Transitions Extra Active version. That's just my go-to. I love that lens and I love the protection, and I can't tell a difference between that and some of my other options that I have. Jen, what's your favorite Transitions adaptive lens technology that's out there?
You know that I've been a big believer for a long time in Transitions Extra Active Brown. That's been my jam. I wear that on all my work glasses. I can't tell a difference at the end of the day with how my eyes feel and how sensitive they are when I wear my blue blocker lenses versus my glasses from previously where I just had regular AR coating. My blue blocker AR coating glasses from a few years ago had that kind of annoying purplish sheen that you would get. And so I kind of fell out of favor using those. One, because I didn't like, if I was going to do a video, take a picture, like don't do that many selfies compared to the average person. But if I was, it was impossible to edit that out. And then two, I actually had patients asking me, are you feeling okay? Are you tired? That sort of stuff. And then I started realizing it was only when I wore those glasses, and it's because that purplish hue, I've got pale skin. It made me look like I had dark under eye circles. So, and then with the extracted brown, if they're like even just slightly tinted when I go outside and come back in, it's more like I have a tan. So that's better.
Well, the thing I love about the extra active is just that fashion and function aspect. You know, of course, the function is going to reduce that blue light, make the eyes feel more comfortable. But that little mild tint, when you have the right color frame, it just makes it pop more, adds a little more flair, and it definitely increases your swag, you know. So I'm definitely a big fan of the extra active. You cannot take me out of that lens.
Well, what I'm excited though to try is like blue blocker lenses have gotten a lot more clear. So I'm talking about Essential Blue series. I mean, the Eisen lens, that's not known as a purpley lens. So this is exciting to be able to offer my patient something even more clear. Let's say if they aren't like us and love transitions, they just haven't tried them yet.
And you know, there's another advantage to the extra active as well, which we're kind of beginning to see in some of our research, but we don't have the studies complete yet, so we're not talking about it much, but I personally feel it. At our headquarters at Essilor, we have an insane amount of fluorescent lighting above our heads. And the large majority of Americans, especially ones that wear glasses, will say that they are light sensitive. And I definitely feel it whenever I'm in that environment with tons of fluorescent lighting. And when I wear my Transitions Extra Active, they have just enough of a hint of a tint indoors that it makes me feel better. I mean, I definitely feel the difference when I'm wearing them. And we're finding in research that some of the subjects are actually mentioning, you know, hey, I also just generally feel better when I wear extra active than when I'm not. So, you know, it has a benefit for today too.
Yeah, I agree. I actually use that as a selling point whenever I'm educating my patients about how that lens is going to make their life a little more comfortable. And then also folks that have migraines and, you know, light triggers it, that's a great component that you can bring to the table as well.
You know, one other thing we're talking about with blue light technology are patients that have reduced visual acuity. Let's say we have a patient with a macular dystrophy, with macular degeneration, with some sort of a vision loss that's reduced their contrast sensitivity and their ability to see fine details. There's a study published last year that showed if that person is wearing a blue blocker lens technology, they get improved contrast sensitivity, improved ability in low light settings. They can see better through blue blocker lenses and better on blue blocker lens technology when you compare that versus a yellow tinted lens even. So I've been really focused on it on my patients with reduced acuity for any reason. Like, why wouldn't I want them to have better contrast sensitivity?
Great point.
I mean, there's a reason the sky is blue. Blue light scatters more easily than any other color. And so if you reduce some of that blue light that's entering the eye, especially as you age, and I'm 50 now, so I guess my eye is doing this, it scatters the blue light even within the eye. And when you reduce the amount of blue light entering the eye, you, like you said, you can have a little bit more clarity of vision, and it just makes you more comfortable, makes it easier to focus as well.
I think that kind of touches on like the last holy grail of blue blocker technology, which is night driving. And I don't think any of us don't have patients that say they can't see as well as they want to at night. And I probably do blue blocker glare coatings more for night driving complaint than even than I do for people that are on the computer or daytime wearers, now that I think about it, because it's just such a huge concern that I get from patients of all age groups.
Yeah, I mean, Jen, that's a great point. I do the same thing, especially being in North Carolina with, you know, living out in the country and these windy roads, especially in the rain, especially that, you know, 40 plus club, you really could see a significant difference when they actually go that route.
40 plus, my 18 year olds are complaining to me about can't see to drive at night. And I was like, gosh, you're so young to be complaining already. We have so many years of complaining.
Yeah, they probably just can't drive, Jen. That's probably what that is.
They can't see because they're looking at their cell phone while they're driving.
There you go. They're getting blue light, but they're just getting it from their digital device.
All right, I want to talk about one other phenomenon that I've actually, this is going to sound crazy. I'm sure you guys saw this publication last year, but I'm seeing it in my own patient base now, smartphone blindness. Have you read about this?
That's a new one to me.
You'll have patients, they'll come in and they'll say like, oh, when I wake up in the morning, one of my eyes has dim vision and maybe it lasts for like 30 minutes, an hour or two, and then like it always goes back to normal. And I, like the first time you hear someone say that to you, it's always like, oh my gosh, MS or something. something. So I like do all this testing, I run a visual field, everything comes back clean. And it happens to them like a couple times a week. I wake up, my left eye is dim. And then what the phenomenon actually is these people, they're in bed at night, all the lights are turned off, they lay on one side and they hold their cell phone out, and they're basically dark adapting one eye up against the pillow, and then the other eye is staring at that screen for, you know, probably a couple of hours. And when they wake up, their photoreceptor cells still aren't fully balanced out. This is a huge issue that we're starting to see, where people are freaking out they have a brain tumor, and it's just they're using their cell phone in bed. Great time for, you know, to talk about blue light technology.
Jennifer, that's real, because my wife, she wakes up in the middle of the night and she's on her phone and she's laying out just as you described. So that's a real problem.
My patients tell me about this. I like literally get one a week right now. And I'm trying to catch myself from saying like, oh, it's because you're using your cell phone in bed. Like, because what if I do get that one person who it actually is MS? So I'm still trying to be careful. I'm not just assuming this, but it every single time now been a cell phone blindness.
Wow. You know, I haven't run into that problem yet, but I'm going to be on the lookout for that and do some research.
I've never been happier to be a Gen Xer than right at this moment. I've never had that happen.
I'm a millennial. Jen is as well. And I can say I'm definitely proud to be a millennial.
As you should be.
Darryl, we have to lead the charge for all these problems we're introducing into the world and our generation.
I'm depending on you guys to take care of me when I'm old and ill. So
we'll definitely make sure that you get the blue blocker glasses after your cataract surgery.
And lens implants as well. So what's next for the Essential Blue series? What's on the horizon for 2018?
Basically, at this point, you can order just about any, in fact, pretty much every lens Essilor sells. If you want to provide blue protection, you can order an Essential Blue series version of that product. So whether it's an ordinary everyday single vision lens, it's an Eyezen, it's a Verilux, it's an Essilor PAL that's not a Verilux, that's what's new with Essential Blue series, because we brought out the Smart Blue filter. People liked it. People embraced it, but they said, you know, hey, I'd like to be able to offer blue protection to patients, not just in premium products. I'd like to order it in all products. And so now you can. That's what's new.
Well, thank you so much for the conversation today. I know I learned a lot from your insights on the studies and the data that you've been reading. So Pete, if you could just keep slogging through all those studies as they get reported and then siphon it down to us in OD speak, it'd be helpful.
As an opti geek, I eat that stuff for dinner. So yeah, I'm happy to keep reading.
If anyone listening to the show has questions about Blue Like or Essilor's Lens Solutions, what's a great way for them to get in touch with you?
My email address is phanlon@essilorusa.com, and I'm always happy to answer questions. And if I don't know the answer, I'll either make one up or find someone who does know the answer.
I like it. Well, thanks again, Pete. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Been in fun. Thanks a lot.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.